Dybala! He is something else. Di Lorenzo, and still Di Lorenzo! The captain brings the house down. Partenopea champions once again, but the 33-year wait will now officially come to an end.
Ciao ragazzi, and welcome to another edition of Serie A Sit Down, World Football Index's podcast for your culture to go. I'm Frank Ravello, he's Richard Carmen.
Ciao, Richard. Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. Just celebrated my 49th birthday, which means I'm officially 2 days into my 50th trip around the sun. Looking forward to what's going to be in store for me here in the next year, except more soreness and knee and joint pain and things like that, things that come with just getting old. How are you?
I'm good, though. Right now, I feel like I'm a toddler because I feel like my seat's higher than your seat in the camera. So looks like I'm on a stool here. I'm like a little baby here. But I'm good. I am good. No complaints. A lot of good action to end the Serie A before the international break. Obviously, some other bigger news happened this weekend. But I'm good. I can't complain. I'm healthy. So
that's good. That's real good. We had some. We had a few interesting games in there. To go through that. We will certainly go through. We're gonna go match week 29 as an entire batch. We'll break down the results of the draw for the Europa League. Unfortunately, no Serie A teams getting to the last eight of the UEFA Champions League this season. We were spoiled last year getting three. This season, the Serie A is shut out. Oh, thank you, Vincent. That's very kind of you. Also Fiorentina's, Europa Conference League match. We'll break that down. Francesco Acerbi, wasn't behaving particularly well in the Inter Napoli game. We're going to talk about that a little bit. And it subsequently got him sent home, from the friendlies coming up here for the Azzurri. Speaking of the Azzurri, we'll talk about the team that is going to play in the friendlies here. Is it Venezuela the first game? I know Ecuador is the second game. So
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so they'll have those friendlies coming up. And then we will finish with the world's most popular hashtag game. Who won Calcio Twitter? Thank you, Reno. That's very kind of you. James, hey Richard, you really put in the time, Richard. I tell you this with the production quality. I mean, you got the chat complimenting all the work you put in.
Good to see James.
And I'm going to tell you guys, it's all Richard. I'm not afraid to say that.
There you go. So. No, it's good. Appreciate it, James. Appreciate it. Episode 300 coming up. Excited for it. Can't wait. We'll see what we have in store.
Episode 300, in case you haven't, been told, it will start. We will be live on our YouTube channel at noon Eastern on Sunday, 11 a.m. Central Standard Time. And, who knows how long we're going to actually be on, but we're basically going to be getting you all the way to the Italy-Ecuador game, or I don't know if we're going to be on that long. We're going to treat you to there is just a litany of guests that we're going to have on, let them give their say on how the season's going, anything else they might want to talk about. I think we just want to make it about the guests that we've had in the past and those that have been very supportive of us and giving them some time and to show our gratitude to them. It's pretty similar to what we did with the 200th. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Lots of fun, lots of laughs.
Yep.
Just having fun.
Yep, it's going to be great. So with that said, why don't we just go ahead and jump into these games, Richard? It started on Friday with Bologna traveling to Empoli, where it was a 1-0 win for Bologna in the 94th minute. So in the dying embers, and it was that man, boy, Giovanni Fabian has really found some form lately. We kind of made fun of him looking like an 8-year-old or having the face of an 8-year-old, but he's showing he can play. I mean, Bologna pretty much dominated this game, 20-10 on the shots. They had 71% possession, and they continue this incredible quest that they're on to secure a top four place and reach the UEFA Champions League next season. Who would have thought Bologna in the Champions League? But
impressive.
Going to be interesting to see what kind of team they actually have when they get to that point. So moving on Saturday, we had Monza taking on Cagliari. Monza surviving that one, a 1-0 win. Daniel Maldini with a goal of the week candidate. I see a bot has joined us, Richard.
Just ignore Frank.
Yeah. So, but nonetheless, Daniel Maldini with a goal of the week candidate. Wonderful free kick. Monza pretty much had control of this game from start to finish. Cagliari didn't even put anything on target throughout the whole game. Torino travel to the Friuli and get a 2-0 win at Udinese. It was Duvan Zapata with a looping header in the 10th minute. And then it was Nikola Vlasic from Duvan Zapata in the 53rd to seal all 3 points for the Granata. A game that, relatively even in shots, but Torino certainly looking the more dangerous side. Lecce continued to seal Salernitana's fate and try to save their own. They go to Salerno. They capture a 1-0 victory there. It was an own goal by Norbert Jombert in the 17th minute. A game where Salernitana had just about all the possession, especially after that goal got scored, and Lecce just defended for their lives and got out of there with three critical points to try to help secure their survival to play Serie A next season. And then finally on Saturday, wrapping it up, Lazio at Frosinone, 3-2 winners for Lazio. Not to mention that was that Tudor's first game in charge? Actually,
it was.
It was Martuscello who was on the touchline, Giovanni Martuscello, but Igor Tudor is now the manager at Lazio. Didn't start off great for Lazio. Poliarola getting a goal in the 13th minute, but then Zaccagni in the 38th. And then Castellanos, Sarri leaves, Castellanos scores goals. He gets a brace. 3-1 up. Shadira scoring, I guess you can call it a goal of the week candidate. There weren't many goals this week, so we've got to scrape for him. But a nice little overhead kick, even though it was from close range. He scores, made it a little bit interesting, but Lazio held on. Moving on to Sunday, we had Juve and Genoa playing to a 0-0 draw, a game that was completely dominated by Juve in terms of the possession, in terms of the shots, but toward the end of the game, Dusan Vlahovic couldn't stop talking about the referee's mother and talked his way into a yellow, and then shortly after that talked his way into a red. So he will be suspended for Juventus's next match. But Genoa do survive, get the point. Milan further cementing their position in second place in Serie A, a 3-1 win at Verona. Teo Hernandez kind of fell into that goal in the 44th minute, but you take him any way you can get him, right? Christian Pulisic, a tap-in after some really good work from Noah Okafor, but it was the last two goals of this game that are goal of the week candidates. Tijani Noslin, who's got a future. Wonderful goal there, yes. And then Chukwueze with the volley, off of the attempted clearance on the corner. What a way to score your first Serie A goal.
Yeah, about
Chukwueze,
time.
Making it 3-1 for the Rossoneri. Atalanta and Fiorentina ended up postponed. Ultimately, Fiorentina executive Joe Baroni fell critically ill. They chose to postpone the game, and unfortunately, we learned the news today that Joe Baroni has indeed passed away. We send our sympathies to the Baroni family as well as everyone at Fiorentina. I don't think we have word on when the match will be rescheduled. Bigger concerns prevail at the moment. Roma winning 1-0 over Sassuolo. It was a Pellegrini goal. Goal of the week candidate there. And then finally, we had Inter and Napoli play to a 1-1 draw. Darmian in the 43rd minute, Juan Jesus in the 81st, in a game that saw 30 combined shots between both teams, relatively balanced in the possession. Probably argued that Inter were slightly more dangerous than Napoli throughout the course of the 90 minutes. So, Richard, take it away. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with the One of the more marquee games of the weekend, I guess, you know, Inter hosting Napoli. An interesting game for sure. You're looking at, obviously, champions elect Inter kind of running away with the league. Napoli trying to find maybe a second gear now with Calzona, trying to stabilize, but obviously a difficult opponent in Inter. First half, I thought, fairly tight overall. There was a call for a possible penalty in the 28th minute. Thuram gets taken down the box by Rahmani. Fortunately for Rahmani, he was offside in that place. It wasn't a penalty, but really sloppy by the defender there. And some chances, you know, Napoli had some chances, but I think overall what you saw is Inter with the great rotation in the first half, and especially getting the ball over to Bastoni. Bastoni crossed the ball into the box to Darmian. Is there any team in the world that does the defender-to-defender goal better than Inter? I don't think so. Whether it's Bastoni to Darmian or Darmian to Bastoni or Dumfries if he's included, they do it so well over there. Bastoni is unreal what he can do crossing the ball as a center back. And so fantastic goal there for them to take the lead. And it seemed like Inter were pretty much in cruise control in the game, and then eventually they kind of stopped playing. They thought, like, hey, why not let Napoli play into get into the game? And Napoli started getting more and more confidence. Eventually, Juan Jesus, who we'll talk about a little bit later, he ends up getting the game-tying goal. Nice pressure. What I noticed at Napoli do is that they started increasing the pressure against Inter, really forcing the defense to make uncharacteristic turnovers. And what we saw before the goal is that they applied pressure. Bastoni makes a mistake, creates a corner kick unnecessarily. The corner kick, ball goes into the box. Bastoni, again, heads it backwards, back post to Juan Jesus, who's wide open. He taps it in for a goal for a header. So 1-1 there. And Napoli nearly had a winner, too, at the end. After doing nothing all game long, they came on strong at the end. Inter folded. And I thought it's interesting because we'll talk about Inter and Champions League in a minute. But I thought it would have been a good bounce back game to come back and get a result, make a statement game saying to shake that off. But apparently there's still some rust, some hangover from that game against Atleti. And so, yeah, they drew points. Doesn't really ultimately hurt them in the grand scheme of things, but gives absolutely Napoli a new sign of life where they can really make that surge trying to get back into the top five and get a Champions League spot when, for a couple weeks ago, it looked like they were done and dusted. And so what were your thoughts on this game?
I think you just kind of see the product of an Inter that has played so many games over the last, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. You know, you've got the Supercopa thrown in there. You've got Champions League games thrown in there. You know, league games. You know, they went on this just torrid run, you know, and now you're seeing, you know, what was it, a 2-1 win against Genoa? If it wasn't against Genoa, somebody else. And then 1-0, you know, against Bologna, 2-1 against Genoa, you know, 1-1 here. So now you're starting to see, I mean, it just shows you that how difficult it is and how unreasonable it is to ask any team to maintain, you know, that level of intensity and that level of play, you know, when you're playing every 3 days.
You realize how hard that 1-0-2 was that Juve did back several years ago.
Exactly.
It's hard.
Exactly. So I think you're probably seeing what you're seeing is you're seeing an Inter that's just, they're tired. Okay. Even with the rotation, you know, they're just, it's, you know, but they've earned the right to maybe play more of a style of maintenance because of where they are on the table.
Sure.
You know, so it's just it's definitely challenging. So,
Inter finally concede after 76 minutes.
And that's just a sure sign of it, because what's something that Simone Inzaghi's always good at doing? He is good at making the substitutions that take the game away from you in those last 15 minutes of the game. He's not going to kill the game off and try to score an extra couple of goals. If they happen, they happen. Yeah. And they've happened fairly often this season for Inter. But he's setting his team up to end the game.
Yep.
And to ride it out. So, and you know, this time it didn't work. They lost on the second. I mean, Juan Jesus was just unmarked. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you know, they gave and they conceded a goal really uncharacteristically when you think about it.
Yep, 100%. I'm looking at some of the other teams that are involved in the not Scudetto race, but Champions League race. Milan with a nice win against Hellas Verona. I think Milan were fairly comfortable. There was maybe a 15-minute stretch where they kind of just let their guard down, let Verona back into the game. Way too many shots allowed if you're Milan.
Yeah.
But I thought overall, good, you know, good depth, good scoring, good chances created. A lot of posts. Okafor looked good in his appearance there. Pulisic again doing well. Hits the crossbar, gets a goal, tapping off a Okafor created chance. Leao creating havoc, not necessarily scoring, and obviously Teo Hernandez doing what he does. Worth noting in this game that after Teo Hernandez scored, he does his trademark, you know, celebration. One of the assistants for Verona thought that maybe he was gesturing towards a curva, and they went and told the manager. Manager went out and him and Teo had some words. He told the referee that he said something what he didn't say. Teo gets a yellow card on the play, gets suspended for the next game as a result. And then later on, the which is nice to see that, not that it matters, but the manager came out after the game and said, look, hey, I was told wrong information by my assistant, told me that, you know, Teo said something which he didn't say. I talked to Teo after the game. It was my fault. I shouldn't have been a yellow card. I shouldn't have instigated that yellow card, but it's at least he went back on his word, right? And he said nothing, not that it changes the result, but that was a mass confusion in that game. But, you know, Milan win that game. Juve drawing against Genoa. Some people were asking, is it time to get Allegri out of here? And I said, you know, give him an extension. I like what I'm seeing from Juve, right? They're falling to third place. I'm okay with this. Yeah. But again, they're playing the dentist chair that's Genoa. We know how difficult Genoa are. Though Genoa had they didn't have the ball that much. They still created, when they did have the ball, they did get a couple opportunities that Chesney had to make a big save early on in the game.
Yeah.
A couple other times again, he had to make some saves. Juve, again, same recipe we saw last week where they got tons of chances. Vlahovic missing point blank, you know, time after time. And they're not, you know, getting the shots on target. They had some misfortune as well, some posts. Moyes Kane still on a bit of an unlucky streak hitting the post late in the game. Trying to get the winner. And so ultimately, Juve drop another set of points, 2 points. And Milan overtake him now for second place by 3 points now. So you got that. And then plus you got Roma and Sassuolo. Roma going to win there. Sassuolo made it tough for them, for sure. And you look statistic-wise, it's fairly even in terms of statistics. But I think Roma created some good opportunities and again, it's Pellegrini coming to the rescue. He's really emerged under De Rossi and become not only just a great player that we know he is, he's also becoming a goal-scoring threat. He's scoring almost every game now. I forget how many goals he has now under De Rossi, but he's really carrying this team as, you know, as everyone expects him as a captain to do. Lukaku was involved a lot. I thought Svilar had another great game. About time, you know, he finally got a good run under De Rossi. They finally benched Rui Patricio, and Svilar's kind of just stepped up every time, right? Whether it's in Europa League, whether it's in the league, he's been playing well, getting good saves when they need to, timely saves, and really it's something Roma don't have to worry about as much anymore. They can focus on what they need to do is handle the ball possession and go for some goals. And so Roma with a nice result there against a tough Sassuolo team, a team who's trying to avoid getting relegated this year, even though it seems like it's going to happen. Yeah, I mean, that's at least the top five. What are your thoughts on those games?
I mean, it's Sassuolo is just is playing completely different now as they're trying to survive under Ballardini. So, you know, if you win 1-0 against Sassuolo these days, that's pretty admirable. It's not Dionisi's teams that weren't defending well, and you know, you could walk in and score 3 goals on 3 shots against them because they were so soft defensively. They've steeled that up a little bit, you know, but good on Pellegrini to find the way to score there. You know, and I'll just say what I said last week. I mean, I think that at this point, it's just all about getting the points right now. And Juventus are the team that's struggling to get the points. And you don't care how it's done. You know, at the end of the day, you know, Bologna going to Empoli and scoring in the 94th minute and just finding a way to get 3 points. Milan just going to Verona. Because if you take a look at Verona, you know, they're sitting there in a relegation fight, but they haven't been blown out of a lot of games when you think about it. And that's reflected in their goal difference. I mean, they've lost 9 more games that they've won, but their goal difference is only minus 13. So it suggests to you they lose a lot of games by 1 goal. So for Milan, they were relatively comfortable. I think that, you know, when the Noslin goal happened, I think they sweated a little bit, but then they come back and get the Chukwueze goal.
Yeah.
You know, so again, it's you find ways to win right now. And that's really what it's all about when you get to this stage of the season with now 9 games to go for everybody except for Atalanta and Fiorentina. You're trying to just find ways to win games, okay? Yeah. You know, it's not, you know, this isn't the time where you get critical about a team's style. This is about ending the season and getting into a position where you can be in something of prominence the following season. If you're not, you know, and particularly if you're not, you know, going to come away with any silverware. You know, and right now for Juventus, it's getting very worrying. The lack of finishing is finally catching up to them. You know, and they're struggling to win games as a result when you take a look at them. You know, they have, of the top 6 teams, they have the second lowest goal total at 44. Mm. And they have, of the top 7 teams, they have the top 8 teams, they're tied for the third lowest goal total at 44 with I mean, you got to do a double take, but it's Napoli that joins them on 44. Would we say a year ago that next season Napoli was only going to have 44 goals through 29 games?
No,
not a chance in hell. And Fiorentina, a team that in Italiano, you think wing play attacking, they've only got 41 goals. So teams are struggling to score right now. You know, the teams that are scoring goals are doing it in abundance, and they're lo and behold, they're getting results and winning games. Milan. Roma has joined that fray now. Atalanta, you know, have quietly been the fourth highest scoring team in this league. You know, and I think that, you know, the teams that are struggling to score, Bologna is just defending extremely well. They've got the third best defense in the league behind Juve and Inter.
They take their chances well, you know.
Yep. And then they take their chances when they get them. They do things through Xerxe. I mean, it's a very, you know, specifically rigid style that Mota's got them playing en route to achieving what they're achieving at this point, you know, and they've gotten some separation from Atalanta now and Napoli. So you just right now, it's all about finding ways to win. Milan, Roma, and Inter are going to keep winning because they're scoring goals. Atalanta is going to keep winning because they're scoring goals. Okay. Inter's also keeping teams out. Juventus just can't rely on keeping teams out and scoring them one because Vlahovic is missing so many chances.
Yeah.
You know, and he's the one that they depend on for the goals. So it's kind of crazy how this, you know, top end of the table is playing out now. I mean, Inter's running away with this thing. I don't think that this draw to Napoli is the beginning of, I mean, it's a 14-point gap. I mean, it would have to be the biggest collapse in the history of football for Inter to give this up now. There's no way it happens. Milan, I think, right now are very well positioned to consolidate second. I think that happens. And I like, and I can't remember who said it over here in the chat, I don't rule out Juve falling out of top 4. I don't think they fall out of top 5, and I think they still ultimately get a Champions League place. I think Atalanta's too far back. But I can see Bologna and Roma overtaking Juventus, you know, as this wears on. Unless Juventus starts scoring goals, then all is right with the world if you're a Juve fan. That's kind of how it's looking right now.
You know what seems to be the difference between Milan and Roma, right? Milan and Juve. Juve are struggling to score goals. They're struggling to keep people out of their box. They're in their goal. But, you know, Vlahovic, yeah, he's 15 goals this season. And, yeah, some other guys are contributing goals. But as a team, they're kind of relying on Vlahovic to score the goals. And it's while it's still 9 games to go in the season or whatever, too early to grade Milan. But you look at the signings that they had this season, and I think Martino Pucci put out the tweet, but how many goals the new additions have scored this year? It's amazing. This is why they're in second place. It's not just because Leao and Teo are carrying this team. It's all the new boys. You know, Pulisic, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, Chukwueze gets his first goal. It goes on and on and on. It's the whole team is contributing to goals, and that's why they're in second place. They have their depth scoring is much greater than Juventus, and as a result, they're finding ways to get wins. Like you said, and I hate to use that cliche all the time, but it's true in this regard. And what you know, we're some of the people saying that maybe Juve falls out of the top four. I'm not so sure, but if there's a chance, it's because teams like Roma are now are starting to get additional scoring. Yeah, Pellegrini's leading the way, but they're becoming like more of a team in terms of scoring. If Napoli can find their way, you know, who knows? And it'll be interesting going down the stretch. Obviously, Bologna, they're the odd maker out here. They're probably similar to more Juve because they play, you know, defense and they take their chance as well. But again, they're starting to get contributions from Fabian, Salamakers, you know, Ferguson coming from the midfield. They got some depth there that's scoring goals, timely goals for them. Yep. They're not always getting a lot of goals, but it's timely with Thiago Motta's system. And so, yeah, this could be interesting for Juve if they don't figure it out quickly. They're getting the scoring chances. They're just not putting it in the back of the net. And shout out to Steve. I see you there. So I saw a comment by Dominic asking how Calzona's substitutions were in that Inter game. They're okay. Yeah. They're okay. I mean, it wasn't nothing crazy. Traore came out for Cayuste. You know, question whether the Chargers should have started in that game. Murray Rui came in for Oliveira. I thought that was okay substitution. Simone for Raspadori and a couple other stuff. So it was okay. I thought the last couple substitutions were a little late for Ngonge and Lindstrom to bring them on at, you know, after 90-minute mark. Like,
yeah.
You bring those two on earlier if you want to try to win a game or get a result. But, yeah, it was okay by Calzona.
I mean, the other thing that is interesting, I think that I think I heard somewhere, and I think it was actually the commentator in the Milan-Verona game after the Chukwueze goal, Milan leads Serie A in substitute goals.
That's you interesting. Know? I would have thought of Inter.
Well, so I mean, it's just another thing to just kind of point to the Pioli out crowd about it. Apparently Pioli seems to know the right time to bring guys on. And you know, and then they come through and they score goals. Jovic has been fantastic as a super sub, and Okafor's had his moments.
Yep.
You know, Chukwueze getting a goal here. You know, players have come through. You know, and then in the starting lineup, you know, Pulisic's having an outstanding season. Loftus-Cheek has contributed some goals. Mm-hmm. You know, people could say, well, you know, Leao's goals and assists are down. Is he not what he used to be? Yeah, he's still the same guy. The problem is the team has more balance to the point that Dominic says.
Team shade, you know? Leao, and then so other people like Pulisic and Rublev just take an opportunity to score goals, and they do. And 95-year-old Olivier Giroud, who might be going to MLS, he's got 12 goals, 8 assists this year. You know, that's a MVP-type numbers for him. You know,
he's been fantastic.
It's his best year with Milan and out of the three he's been there so far. So
exactly. I mean, so what did we say last year? I mean, it was the glaringly obvious games where Milan got exposed. It's kind of early in the 22-23 season against Chelsea in the Champions League, especially the game at Stamford Bridge. Mm. You know, the way that Chelsea set up defensively, they just outnumbered the Leo and Teo side and said, we dare you to attack us on the other side. We're just going to leave that, you know.
Give us Salamakers. Give us Junior Messias.
Yeah, it was obvious. And it was obvious, you know. And now, you know, if you try to do that, you've got Pulisic on the other side. You've got, you know, you've got Loftus-Cheek in the middle. You've got playmakers. You've got, you know, Benacer and Oddly and Reinders who can work and change the point of attack through the middle where the advantage is. And we talk about this a lot. So I think, you know, I think in the end, and you're going to look back at this and a lot of the criticism of Pioli, people are going to, it's just, I keep harping on this, but it's not warranted at all, especially with 62 points. It's right around what Milan have been doing every year points wise under Pioli. So even, and I think this was just one short of the title winning number 2 years ago. I think they were at 63 at this time, 2 seasons ago. So, that says a lot. It says a lot about how the team is managed. It says a lot about their ability to go through and win games. And maybe they didn't win some of the big games that really mattered. Okay. Maybe they didn't, you know, they needed one goal against Newcastle in that first leg and they would still be in the Champions League. They would have made the round of 16. You know, they got it handed to them in the derby. And certainly that is something that is a concern that's going to need to rectify itself. And how they do in the Europa League is also going to matter now at this point. Because by all accounts, 15 points clear of Atalanta, if you're talking about 5 Champions League places, their Champions League place is secure for next year. you know, unless they have a complete collapse. And then the injuries. Yeah, the injuries did so much damage. Could you, I mean, I'm just going to ask, yeah, and that's to your point, Dominic. I mean, would how close would Milan be to Inter right now if everybody stayed fit? I mean, we're starting to get into the hypothetical a little bit here.
I would say Inter would have at least the lead might be cut in half at
7. At okay, I think that's fair
because I think Inter are that good this year.
I think that's
and
fair.
Milan had a growing period, so you know, but who knows? Sure. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. So, you know, I think that you know, with Lazio, with Lazio, it's just too little, too late. I mean, you can have Monza in that conversation a little bit now as they're starting to work. Monza have won 4 of their last 5. Yeah. You know,
do you think Lazio can make a European push late in the year? I'm not talking about Champions League. I'm not talking about Europa League. I'm talking about Conference League. But you know, it's Europe. It's tough.
It's going to be tough. You know, right now, because I think it would be 2 Europa places and 1 conference place.
They're 4 behind Atalanta at the moment.
Yeah. I don't see it. I don't see it. You know, Napoli are looking a little more respectable under Calzona. Atalanta have been okay here. You know, I can't sign off on that one. I think it's going to be a challenge for them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. To your point, Monza, you know, getting a lot of wins here lately. And really the relegation fight is becoming it has been a thing, and it's going to be entertaining down the stretch. Cagliari, I thought they created chances. They couldn't get a damn shot on target. Lapadula, for the life of him, couldn't hit the net if you gave him an empty net. They had their chances in terms of the creation, but nothing on target. You're not gonna have a chance to even get a result in a game if you can't get it on target. Monza, to their credit, obviously Daniel Maldini with the goal of the week candidate there, sensational free kick. Monza did enough. You know, they did enough in that game, I think. And you know, Torino, good result for them. Maybe they can have a late season push into the European spot. Who knows? Salernitana, to I think Dominic's point earlier, saying like, "Hey, stop it! It's dead." You know, you feel for them. It's what is the thing Patrick Kendrick tweeted out the other earlier today? He said, "Salernitana are now on their 6th coaching change in 105 games back in Serie A. So they had 3 in 21, 22. You had Castori, Colatuano, and Nicola in 2022-23. You had Paulo Sousa come in after Nicola, and then this year you had Pippo Inzaghi come in after Sousa." Fabio Livarani, who just got fired after this game against Lecce, and then now they have Colantuano back again for them. So, yeah, it's not looking good.
In your life, if you're a Salernitana supporter, and probably signing a contract to just go down with them and maybe help rebuild them to bring them back up.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be interesting because like Sassuolo, they're currently, if you look at the table right now, pull it up here. Scroll down to the bottom. 20 pages open here. Frosinone are currently in the bottom. It's them and Empoli. I mean, Frosinone has dropped. Frosinone has dropped so quickly. It feels like 2 months ago they were mid-table.
Well, we predicted this, though. We've been saying this for weeks. Anybody who would listen said Frosinone is going right down into the bottom 3.
This is the EDF we were expecting, right?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I agree with somebody in the chat. I think Vincent said, like, Hellas has enough talent to get out. They should be going down, but they have enough talent to get out. And Cagliari probably has enough between them, Empoli, and Frosinone to get out. You think Frosinone has some talent, but they can't stop anybody.
Yeah. And, so I would say, if I'm picking a team right now, I still say Sassuolo gets out because I think they'll figure this out with Ballardini and they're going to start stringing together some wins. The talent is there. I think it's Empoli that will – Frosinone's in 18th, and I think that they're in the relegation the rest from here on out. I don't think they fight their way out. I think Sassuolo gets out, and I think they get out at the expense of Empoli because Empoli just simply cannot score.
Yeah.
If you can get one on them, the game's over. Already, because they just have struggled so much for goals all season. So, you know, I think that that's why Dionisi got fired, because Empoli scored 3 on Sassuolo, and, you know, Sassuolo brass just finally had enough, said, man,
You just gave up three to a team who doesn't know how to score.
Their first three goals of the season.
Right. Practically. I mean, those are three. That was like what? Almost 15% of Empoli's goals for the whole season just in that one game.
Yeah.
Three out of the 22 that they've scored. I mean, 22 and 29 games is miserable.
Yeah.
So just not a lot to, you know, if you're an Empoli supporter, there hasn't been a lot to be happy about. And I don't think you're going to be any happier. They're going to be going down. Sassuolo's getting out of it. I think your three are frozen, only Empoli, Salernitana.
Yep. I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
So goals of the week?
Goals of the week. All right. First, I want to give an honorable mention to Caprile for Empoli. Man stood on his head. Eight saves in that game.
Yeah.
Did everything he could to keep Bologna out. They eventually got a goal. But he was fantastic, I thought, in that game, notwithstanding. Number five for me, Vojvoda. His great assist on Zapata's goal. I mean, beautiful from distance. Curler from the right side. Okay. Wonderful there. Number four, I'm going with Vincent's boy, Pellegrini. Nice. He basically took the ball himself. Said, I'm going to go ahead and score for us because nobody else can score. Lukaku can't score. But nice goal for him outside the box. Number three, I'm going to go with Chukwueze, first goal. Nice volley out of midair there to get his first goal of the season. Only reason it wasn't number one for me because I thought a couple other goals outdid it. Maldini's free kick, number two for me. Great goal by him. Who thought he could do free kicks like that? But for me, Tiani Noslin, what a strike. I mean, that was a rocket that came off his foot there. Mike Maignan had no chance of that. And Mike Maignan's a really good goalkeeper. So for me, Noslin gets the game winner, the number one goal of the week for me. What about you?
All right. I have the same top four as you, except a slightly different order.
Okay.
But number five, I'm going to go with the Khedira overhead kick, even from point blank range. I'll go for that. Pellegrini's number four for me. Chukwueze's goal is in at number three. Noslin's goal too. I'm gonna give Paolo's boy the goal of the week. What a free kick! You know, helping keep Monza's winning streak going along here. So you know, in a week where we didn't have a lot of goals, we found five good ones. So
Five good ones.
Yep. Well, six. You and I are six. Different on five.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
But they might have been the only goals scored all weekend too. But
yeah.
But anyway, so that was, those were our goals of the week. So let's go into Europe. Let's, postpartum on, Inter to start with. It was just, I don't fault Inzaghi for the game plan that he had. I fault the players for not finishing because there were enough chances to see this off, in the 90 minutes. Taram had a great chance. I'm trying to remember who's the one that put it over the bar. That should have been the one that did it.
Probably Lautaro.
Might have been. But Inter leave this thing just completely kicking themselves because not only, you know, did they have this tie? They should have, not only should they have won this tie. They had the chances to win it in the second leg. They had the chances to get the result at the Wanda that would have got them into the last eight. But then you take a look at that draw and you take a look where Atletico Madrid got to. They're going to play Borussia Dortmund, and then the winner of that's playing the winner of PSG and Barcelona. Inter would not have been fazed by that bracket.
Yeah.
You know, and could have very conceivably seen Inter reach the final. You know, of the Champions League, had they been able to, you know, another one of those where it's astonishing how fine the margins are in a competition like the UEFA Champions League. We were talking about Milan earlier, just needing one goal at home against Newcastle to qualify. And now we're talking about Inter, you know, pick any of those chances they had, especially in the second half, and they're going through. Instead, they're going home.
Yeah, it's a shame because it's one of the better teams in Europe going out so early. I tend to think that Inter bottled this. I think they were the favorites. Obviously, Atleti are good. They are hard to beat at home. The Italian teams have not fared well in Spain in general in knockout rounds. However, this Inter team is so versatile, can do so many things. And I didn't actually like the game plan that Inzaghi came out with. I thought it was too defensive. It looked like he was almost playing for a draw at times. And by the way, shout out to Jan Oblak. First of all, I'm happy people are so, and I tweeted this out, I'm happy people are finally recognizing Sommer now and said, yeah, they're like, okay, this guy's a really legit goalie. He's going to break the shutout record, blah, 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 blah. So people are all on his nuts and for good reason. But also people forget about Jan Oblak, you know, and I mentioned Jan Sommer is a really good goalkeeper. But Jan Oblak is a world-class goalkeeper. That's what we saw in the penalty shootout. Jan Oblak is not the same Jan Oblak from a couple years ago, but he's still class. Class is permanent. He fought. He made the big saves when he had to, both in regulation, overtime, and in the shootout. So you really got to see that come out. And people are like, I'm sure that surprised a lot of people. I don't know why it should, because Jan Oblak's a name that should be a household name, and I don't know why it's not. Anyway, I thought, yeah. You know, Inter didn't look themselves. Gave up those goals that really is un-Inter-like to give up the way the two goals that they gave up in the game. It just didn't seem like it was their typical selves. And I don't know if it's the pressure got to them or their key players. You know, you mentioned Thuram has some opportunities. Mkhitaryan had some great chances. Barella. I mean, everyone had chances in this game. And they just couldn't put it away. And yes, the players deserve a lot of blame for that. But I don't. I feel like the game plan from Inzaghi also was not up to Inter's par, or Inzaghi's par, and I thought it's a team effort, a team loss. They choked away a game where they could have since, and again, looking at the draw, and you just mentioned it, they could have gone deep. They could have gone deep again, and it could have been one goal would have done it. When you get to a shootout, it's 50-50 at that point. Anything can happen, but they missed so many opportunities, not only at the Wanda, but also at home, and now they're going to be like, shit, what do we do now? We got Coppa Italia and Serie A. So not even Coppa Italia because I got kicked out by Bologna. So you just have Serie A. And now they're like, okay, what do we do now? So maybe that now even shows you, I doubt that 1-2 is going to happen now because they're going to be like, well, season's over. We already won a Scudetto. Like, what do we care about getting to 1-2 now? It's not going to happen. So it's
103. It's, they can do what they got. If they win out, they'll be at 103.
Yeah.
But they got to win. They got to play 9 and win 9.
Yeah,
that's their, you know, then they'll be at 103. They'll be.
And I agree with Vincent. The subs were also questionable in the game. And just the whole game plan by Inter from top to bottom, you know, players and everything, it seemed like they overthought it.
But
they
I'll play devil's advocate to your take. I mean,
please, yeah.
Inter, this is the way Inter want to ultimately be. They want to let you have the ball, they want to be able to let you invite and absorb. They're good at, and you alluded to it earlier in the podcast. Who's better in the world at just winning the ball and just going end to end before you know it? You've been beaten. You've conceded a goal. It's kind of what happened on the DeMarco goal. You know, so it almost was Inter could play the football they were comfortable playing and shouldn't have been fazed by the crowd or any of that other stuff. They just didn't. And I think they were.
Yeah.
You know, comfortable with the way the game was going to be playing out. They just didn't
too comfortable. Their
chances. Yeah, they just didn't finish the chances.
I mean, very uncharacteristic of the players too. Like a couple of shots went way over the bar in the game, and because they're leaning back too much, they're too comfortable in the game. It's unfortunate because this is such a good team, and now it seemed like people were starting to recognize Inter outside of Europe, and now they're like, nah, we were right the whole time. They suck. Serie A is a farmer's league, and I hate that shit.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit about Napoli last week. I mean, against Barcelona, they were overmatched, you know, for what they had to go up against. So,
yeah.
It's a shame. We had three make the quarterfinals. We had one get all the way to the final. We had an all-Italian semifinal. We had a Derby della Madonnina semifinal last year.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully we can get back to those things in the following season, but we'll have to, you know, look at what could have been, especially in the case of Inter. You know, as we let that last eight unfold. Who do you think of the last eight? Just for fun. I mean, nobody's in Serie A, so it doesn't matter. Might not matter to us, but who you got winning it all?
All right, so you got Arsenal, Bayern. It's hard to say, right? That game. You think
winner of that plays winner of Real Madrid, Man City. That's just loaded.
I think Real Madrid, Man City, one of those two teams are winning the whole thing.
I agree.
I could see Real Madrid bouncing back after last year. Well, no, you know, they don't have Benzema anymore. Yeah, that's such a tough draw. Whew. I say Man City win it all again.
You think they go back? Yeah, they're getting De Bruyne. De Bruyne's getting more matches. He's getting his legs under him. You know, they're kind of getting it back together. I could certainly see it happening. Yeah.
But it's a win of that tie, I think. I don't think anybody else is going to.
I think they're the two best teams left.
Yeah.
Shame they've got to play each other in the quarters.
Yeah.
I guess Bayern have been way too inconsistent.
Exactly. Normal Bayern, they win easily against Arsenal. I think Arsenal has a chance.
I think Bayern win, and I only think Bayern win because I think they get the luxury of being the home team for the second leg. They won't be fazed by going to Arsenal. You know, they may. It'll be a score. Both teams will score, but Arsenal might take an edge to Munich. But then I think Bayern. Bayern has more European experience and pedigree.
Sure.
Than Arsenal, and I think that and the second game being in Munich matters. And I think that they go through, I'd love to see Real Madrid and Ancelotti get through. So for the hell of it, I'm just going to say he's going to, he's going to find a way this time and he'll derail Man City. I think PSG knock out Barcelona. I think Mbappe will be on a mission. I think that will be the surprise and, I think Atletico Madrid will stymie Borussia Dortmund. Okay. So I think you'll have Bayern, Real Madrid, Atleti PSG, and I think you're going to have a Real Madrid PSG final. I think you're going to have Mbappe against his future team. That's what I'm going to that's what I'm going to shoot for here with Real Madrid finding the resources to win that final. So I'm going to go with Real Madrid to win it all.
Okay. Well, we both of us picking the winner of that tie to win it all. So
yeah, and I think a lot of people are doing that right now. So, but let's come back to being more Serie A centric. We'll look at the Europa League first, and we will have an all Italian quarterfinal: Milan and Roma going at it, with the winner having to play the winner of Leverkusen and West Ham United. I mean, this last eight for the Europa League is dynamite. I mean, it's going to be
talked about how good it was going to be this year.
Yeah. You know, but let's look at Milan and Roma. You know, Milan have been flaky enough defensively, and with the way Roma are attacking, this is going to be a concern. You know, Milan had the fortune of playing Roma twice when Mourinho was the manager, and Roma had practically, especially the, you know, is the game against Milan that got Mourinho sacked, when Roma just appeared to quit playing for him. I've got, I'm just going to be a homer and say Milan find a way to get this, but man, the way the Roma are attacking lately under De Rossi, it's scary. I think that Milan get the advantage at the San Siro, and I think it's score draw second leg. I know Vincent won't like hearing that, but I think Milan go through.
It was I watched Bobo TV this afternoon where they talked about this game. You had, you know, like Gabelman, who was a Roma fan, and you had, you know, Daniela Brogna, who's a Milan fan, and they're all talking about like this game, who's gonna win. And it's funny because all the Milan fans and people in the chat were saying Milan's, you know, 60-40 favorites, and then Roma were like, ah, it's 50-50, 55-45, you know, but it's gonna be close. It's gonna be close. I mean, if this was under Mourinho, I think it would have been difficult. That would have been a difficult game as well. It would have been a much more low scoring game. But this is Daniele De Rossi, a different animal. He doesn't have the experience that Milan has or Pioli has. However, Roma do, as a club, have experience in Europe. They went deep the last 2 years. So you got to think about that. And obviously, under De Rossi, they've been more attacking. You got Pellegrini. El Shaarawy's evolved under De Rossi. Obviously, Lukaku and Dybala, those two. In particular, Dybala is going to be key. If he stays healthy, this is going to go possibly shootout, you know, after two legs. It's fairly even all the way around. I think both teams have really good attacking options. It's going to be who plays the best defense. You know, Milan at times play really well. And we've also seen at times where they've been shambolic, you know, if you got, you know, this year, Thiao and old man Kiar. They've been leaking up goals, you know. It seems like Kalula got injured again.
But they've got Tomori back.
Tomori is back.
They look like they're tightening it up just, I mean, think about it. I mean,
Gabby has gotten better with them.
Starting to tighten it up a little bit more. You know, so they're trending in the right direction defensively. It was a great Noslin goal that I don't think anybody stops. You know, and there's really nobody, you know, people are like, well, who do you blame? That's about it. You don't blame anybody. You just tell the other guy he scored a great goal because that's what happened. You know, so, and I, with the way Dorossi sets up Roma to play now, I have concerns. Yeah, Tomori's out for the first leg. I'd rather have Tomori for the second leg when they're away.
Yeah,
and have that stabilizing force and have the athleticism and physicality that he might be able to bring to deal with Lukaku. So, but anyway, Roma are. I mean, you said Svilar has been able to produce some incredible games of late.
Yep.
And a lot of that is because the defending isn't as tight as it used to be under Mourinho. Yep. And at some point, things have to normalize for Svilar. You know, so I just, that's why I'm going with, I think there's a lot of goals over the course of the two legs, but I think Milan outlast Roma in the last eight.
I think that's a good answer too. I think we're going to see two fantastic tifos, right? First in Milan with their tifo, and then obviously Roma with, you know, the whole song and everything, Roma, Roma, Roma. It's going to be magical both locations. I think they cancel each other out in so many different facets of the game. Yeah. Even goaltender, I mean, Magnon is the better keeper. However, Svilar is playing the better of the two at the moment. I think the game, the series, the two-leg is won in the midfield, and I think Milan have the edge in that regard, just slightly. I think the attacks are fairly comparable. Defenses are, you know, both at times can be good, at times can be bad.
Yeah.
But I think the midfield has better depth for Milan. And so I think, yeah, I think, I like your word. Milan survived this battle. It's going to be a lot of goals. You probably see something like a, 2-1, and maybe 3-2 or something in the second leg or something crazy. Who knows? But it's going to be a lot of goals. And I think it's whoever survives. And it's so unpredictable because we haven't seen enough of De Rossi in Europe to know what they're about. We know what Roma's about. Can that translate with De Rossi? And we'll see. It'll be a huge trophy on his mantle if he beats Milan in over two legs. I'll just say that.
It's going to be fascinating. The other team remaining from City on the Europa League, Atalanta. Oof, they go to Liverpool, and have to play Liverpool. Liverpool, who just came off of eliminating Sparta Prague 11-2 on aggregate. John, nice to have you with us.
Yeah.
If Atalanta somehow survived this, they would see the winner of Benfica and Marseille in the semifinals.
Wow.
Two crazy teams that have European pedigree and have gotten better over the course of the season. I mean, it's brutal for Atalanta. It's already hard enough with the Liverpool team that this Liverpool team's on a mission. They're going to try to win everything they possibly can for Klopp's last year, and they're playing accordingly. I mean, they not only can spread you out up top, but they have so much pace up top. Nunez in the middle, you can play Gakpo, you can play Salah. I don't know where Diaz is in this picture. You know, you've got some very steady midfielders. Szoboszlai obviously has been a big player for them. You've got you've got Trent there on the right hand side. You've got Virgil, who's a very good defender, but Liverpool fans, please stop with this shit comparing him to some of, you know, to Maldini and Nesta. He's good, but he is not sitting at this table with these other defenders who have, you know, who are just absolute legends. So yeah. I hate to say this for Atalanta because the form that they've been in recently concerns me too. They survived Sporting Lisbon, who I thought was going to knock out Atalanta. I don't see how Gasperini pulls this off. I don't, you know, and if they can stay within two goals of Liverpool on aggregate over the 180 minutes, I think that in itself would be an achievement. I think this will be the end of the road for Atalanta.
Yeah, it is. It's difficult. The one saving grace, and it might not be, is that Liverpool are a home first leg. Because that, on a European night, is one of the most difficult places to play. There's maybe a handful of places you could say are like, on a European night, they're difficult. Liverpool is one of them. It's up there, if not, you know, one of the best. It's curious to see what Gasperini does and how he comes out. I think in order for Gasperini to be successful in the first leg on the road, we've experienced that in European nights recently, how daunting and how much pressure they put on. The fans are on top of you. Liverpool come out and attack you, try to get an early lead. Gasperini has to play their defense. They need to be very attacking or very defensive. They have to go to the defensive mode and soak up that pressure, get that crowd out of the game. If they can even get an early goal, that would be my deal. But you got to soak up the pressure. You know it's going to be immense pressure for the first 30 to 45 minutes because they're going to be all ramped up from before the game. Play that defensive system. Don't give them anything. Try to counterattack all their strengths and their speed because, like you mentioned, they got a lot of pace over there. And hit them, you know, take their opportunities. You know, Coop Miners is going to have to be huge in this game. Whomever starts, whether it's Lookman or CDK or Skamaka, it doesn't matter whoever it is on the pitch, they're going to have to take their chances well. They can't be like Inter and miss all these quality opportunities, or Napoli miss these opportunities to get a goal, because you can walk out of Liverpool with a score draw or just a draw in general. Anything's possible in that second leg. When you take it home, you can open it up a little bit more and have a chance to see what, you know, maybe to some people's point in the chat that maybe Liverpool will be concentrated on the league. You know, if things work out for Atalanta, they, you know, maybe Liverpool play Arsenal that same week, you know, whatever, who knows, we'll see. But that first leg is going to be crucial for Atalanta. If they have any chance in this tie, it's that first leg. They've got to get a draw.
They got to get a draw.
Yeah, a win would be fantastic, but a draw.
It's not happening. The one thing that I think they have working for them that could be interesting is with their setup, if it's two strikers, if it's Lookman and Diketelare, and you've got Coop Miners in that role behind them, how does Liverpool defend that, you know, with the way they're set up? That could be true. That's the one thing that could be tricky for them. And Coop Miners doesn't just sit in the middle of the park. He'll move around.
They're very creative, Atalanta, offensively. So that could stymie that great Liverpool defense.
Yep. But ultimately, I just think Liverpool are playing way too well. They're on way too much of a mission. Yeah. I can't see it. I just can't.
Yeah.
So, and then finally, let's go to the Conference League, where European gods were just smiling at Fiorentina with the draw that they got. Victoria Plzen, or Pilsen, whatever you want, however you want to call them, they go to Pilsen for the first leg.
Yep.
And then if they win that, they're going to get the winner of Club Bruges and PAOK. While the other side of the bracket is Aston Villa against Lille, with the winner playing the winner of Olympiacos and Fenerbahce, easily the tougher half of that bracket. I mean, if Fiorentina don't reach a second consecutive Conference League final, it'll be a disappointment. You know, Bruges are... they've taken steps back because they've had so many players get sold. But they're still going to be a problem. And that's who Fiorentina is going to see in the semis. Pilsen, I don't see them being a challenge. But I'm going for Fiorentina to be back in the final of this Conference League. So and if Fiorentina does advance, Italy will mathematically secure the fifth spot for the Champions League. So we are pulling for you, Fiorentina. Don't fuck this up.
Yeah. Give us that fifth spot.
Give us that fifth spot. It's all on you. What do you think? I mean, I got no other way to put it. This is as idiot proof as it could get for Fiorentina. And I don't want to be disrespectful to the other three teams, but Fiorentina are better than all three of these teams that are on their side of the bracket.
Yeah, and I think if anybody knows how to overcome tragedy and build a team around it or bring a team together because of it, it's Fiorentina, right?
Oh, yeah.
Davide Astori, a few years ago when that happened, they went on a great tear after that unfortunate incident, again, with Joe Barone passing away. yeah, it's a favorable bracket, but they got to still take care of business, and hopefully they feel it's a they're on a mission to kind of, you know, to bring him some joy from, you know, in heaven, and get them back into the finals, and if not, you know, win it this year. But I'm with you. If they don't get to the finals this year, it's going to be a disappointment, I think, because it's laid out in front of them. The teams are beatable, not necessarily easy, but they're beatable.
Yeah.
And you know, they're going to be at home in the second leg. So yeah, let's hope that they can get some good results, especially early in the first legs, and knock it out of the way, and then and cruise the rest of the way. So we'll see. I'm hoping for we're all pulling for them, I think, except yeah, for Juve, maybe.
Let's see what happens with that. But I think there's not much more that needs to be said. But I think they reach the final. I think they'll play Aston Villa in the final. I think they'll see another Premier League team. Because I think Aston Villa has been taking this seriously. And I think, yeah, I agree. I mean, Aston Villa, Unai Emery in a final, I think that's going to be very hard for Fiorentina to overcome. We'll just have to see if they get there and if that's the opponent. So, but it'll be interesting, that's for sure. So,
yeah.
So that's our roundup on Europe. We move on now to Francesco Acerbi, who got in a little trouble in this Inter-Napoli game, making some racist comments in the direction of Juan Jesus. They don't bear repeating. We just need to tell you that it was said. It's our understanding that at some point in the game, Juan Jesus was asked by reporters after the game. He said, yeah, Acerbi came to me and apologized. But now Acerbi, you said, took to social media and said, no, I never apologized, et cetera, et cetera. So it has ultimately led to Francesco Acerbi. You can take the man out of Lazio. Here we go.
Leave it to Vincent.
Yep.
So what happened was, yeah.
Go ahead. Can't finish it for me.
During the game, Acerbi and Acerbi said something to Juan Jesus. I think it was after the game, or maybe it was at halftime. Juan Jesus went up to the referee, told the referee what happened. Apparently, Acerbi walked up and apologized for saying what he said. And then after the game, Acerbi was interviewed by the reporter, and he said, oh, I didn't say anything. That's false. I absolutely say nothing like that. And then that's why Juan Jesus went to Instagram and said, no, this is what happened. You know, called him out in front of everybody. And as a result, Acerbi's not going to go with the Azzurri. He's been called back. And it's interesting because I was watching the game. I saw Acerbi was getting fired up because Raspadori was all over him. They were going back and forth as well. It's the heat of the moment. I don't know what's said, but I can't imagine Juan Jesus lying about something like that. I mean, that would be a horrible accusation. And if the referee heard that Acerbi apologized, the referee should, you know, get some, you know, maybe a ban as well, because why didn't you stop the game? Why don't you handle it? Or why don't you give a red card out or whatever? So curious what the referee says about all this after the fact. But if it's true what Acerbi said, then he needs to, you know, I think they were saying maybe he gets like a 10-game suspension. That's a minimum. I think he needs a much longer suspension if that's the case. Obviously done for this year, but shit, he shouldn't be able to be playing for shit, I would say 20 games or something at least. 10 is not enough if what he said is true. And it's a shame, you know. He has been doing so well for Inter and all that stuff, but that means nothing. I mean, if you're racist, you're making comments like that, there's no point. There's no room for you in the game. You need to go.
This is the FIGC we're talking about, though.
That is the part that scares me. Yep. And so, like I said, I can't imagine Juan Jesus makes this stuff up. And by all accounts, it's true. But let's I guess see how the process goes. But again, you mentioned FIGC. They can't be trusted. They just fuck everything up. And so I imagine nothing's really going to happen, nothing substantial enough, because they've never done anything in the past to fix anything. So, but it's unfortunate because now I think people are going to, even Interista, are going to look at Acerbi a different way now. And you've seen all these comments about Lazio's Vincent, man, but I'm not going to repeat. It's unfortunate that it went down like it did, and it's very disappointing. And I'm using nice words. I'm trying not to blow up about it like I have in the past, but it's disgusting. My comments that I had about the Mike Maignan incident early in the season, you could put the same comments here, but it's unfortunate.
Yep.
So with a chair be out, let's talk about who's in for the Azzurri, making a brief tour here to the United States. Take it away with the selections there, sir.
Would help if I unmute myself first. Yeah, let me pull up the called team. Right there we go. There, it's on the screen now. Okay. All right, so starting first in goalkeepers, you had Carnesecchi, Donnarumma, Moret, and Vicario. Obviously, Carnesecchi's starting. Just kidding. He might actually.
I wish Di Gregorio. I mean, they're friendlies.
Yeah.
I wish Di Gregorio got to make this trip.
I agree.
I would have taken him over Merritt.
I agree. Defenders. Well, it's no longer Acerbi. It's now Gianluca Mancini.
Yeah.
Like for like. he comes in instead. Bastoni, Bellanova, Buongiorno, Cambiasso. Good for him. Darmian, Di Lorenzo, Di Marco, Scalvini, and Udogi. Midfielders, you have Barella, Bonaventura, Folaronchu. Good for him.
I'm
Fratesi,
happy for him.
Yeah, Jorginho, Locatelli, and Pellegrini. And then the forwards, you got Chiesa, Luca. Good for him as well. Orsolini, Raspadori, Retegui, Zaccagni, and Zaniolo. Thoughts on the Azzurri 11?
I like that we're seeing different people. I don't think we have enough different. I mean, like I said, Di Gregorio over Merritt, I think I would have been fine with. You know, I look at this a little bit more. Buongiorno deserves the trip. You know, Scalvini, let's give him another chance. Let's see how it looks. It is a shortage of center backs here. You've got Bastoni. Yeah, maybe there isn't. Darmian, do you deputize him as a center back in one of these games? We'll see. I mean, it's an interesting deal. Lorenzo's going to start on the right. You're going to have Di Marco on the left. And then maybe Buongiorno and Bastoni, or some combination of that. Mancini and Bastoni could be another option. You know, I think this is these are the games where you can give Scalvini some more meaningful minutes and see if it's any better than what happened against England in the qualifier. Moving to the midfield, happy for Folaroncio. Hopefully, he gets an honest run out to see what he can be, see what he's made of. I think Bonaventura has been very good for Fiorentina this season, so he certainly deserves the opportunity. I don't know why we keep picking Jorginho. I know that he's in very good form for Arsenal, you know, but when he gets to Italy, he seems like he gets overrun a lot. I'm kind of walking on eggshells with that take, but, I guess Locatelli, if Spalletti plays a 4-3-3, then I guess Locatelli may sit in front of that back four. You know, we'll see how that all plays out. And then the forwards. Luca, are we planning wing play with lots of crosses then? Because I think that would be the ideal way to use Luca.
Yeah.
You know, Chiesa. Somebody made a comment about how Chiesa is just kind of getting run into the ground right now over at Juventus. I just don't feel like that this was a thing to take Chiesa to.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of those, hey, we know what we've got with this guy. But then who do you take? You know, Berardi's injured. Zaccagni made the team, so there's no problem there. You'd have to go and take a look and make a determination of who would have to take his place. Be interesting to see what Orsolini does. He's been okay for Bologna. Raspadori, interesting one. Hasn't played much for Napoli this season, but again, another opportunity to give him a run out. Yeah, El Shaarawy, I think that's an excellent one, in fact. Good call, Vincent. I think I'd have taken El Shaarawy over Chiesa. I agree with you. These are friendlies, you know. These are two games where you give yourself an opportunity to take a look at some of the fringe players.
Yes, yes.
You know, ahead of the European Championships. I think some of these guys didn't really need to do this trip with how many games they've been playing. So I'm sounding overly critical of Spalletti, but they are friendlies, and you know, there's enough of an experimenting with certain players to be able to see what they offer in a run out.
Yeah, I hope he experiments with like the fringe players, like you said, because, like, you know, I would love to see a anyone but Donnarumma in goal, just to see what they can do. In defense, you're assuming to go with the 4-3-3. Udoji on the left hand side instead of DiMarco, give DiMarco a rest. Cambiasso on the right, maybe Buongiorno and Bellanova in the middle or something like that, to see what they got. Maybe Scalvini as well, you know, he could get some minutes for him. Rest some of the other guys. You look at the midfield, Bonaventura, I like to see what he can do, see more of him. We already seen him with the Azzurri, but certainly Fratesi, Folorunshu, want to see what they can do, and you know, maybe Locatelli and Pellegrini getting some minutes there. I imagine a lot of rotation in these games because it's our friendlies. And then with the forwards, yeah, if you're gonna have Luka play, you're gonna have some good wing play. I think Chiesa shouldn't play at all during these two games. I think put Zaccagni out there, give him an opportunity to get back in good favor with Spalletti and try to make a claim for that left wing spot, or at least a good substitution spot. And then, you know, Orsolini, I want to see Orsolini play. I definitely want to see Raspadori play at some point, and see Retegui and Luca. But mostly I want to see a lot of guys that don't play much. I want to see the guys who are the vets that we know are going to be probably in the starting 11. Let them sit. Don't let them get injured before the Euros. Let them relax and as best they can. Just go there, experience, talk up the young guys, and I want to see some new guys play.
Yeah. Yep. Please don't make me watch Zaniolo. Yeah, he's been. It's interesting. So we'll see. It'd be nice, you know. Enjoy those games, guys. I believe the Venezuela game is it Wednesday or is it Thursday? With the Ecuador game on Sunday on the 24th. So. You know, the Italy Ecuador game is a sideshow to the Serie A sit down 300th podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Going on earlier that day. So
that's right.
But we move on now and we finish with the world's most popular hashtag game. It is now time for Who Won Calcio Twitter. Take it away, Richard.
It would help if I learned how to do this thing. You know, how long have we been doing this? I still can't figure out how to do this stuff. All right, let me get it out here. All right, so starting things off, we're going to go with local pasta maker. So let me go back a step. So this person, AFC Dulo or whatever, an Arsenal fan, he comes up and says a ridiculous tweet saying, David Raya or Gigi Buffon both in the prime, who are you taking? And this guy got slaughtered as a result, as he should be. So Someone responded back, and that's the local pasta maker, says, Simone Zaza, Thierry Henry, both in their prime. Who are you taking? There's some other good ones, but which I'm sure they'll be on here, but that's funny.
Excellent. Big show. A little self-deprecation for the team he supports. Lautaro tonight. In the Milan shirt as captain.
The guy in the background laughing. All right, moving on. After Inter lost, Napoli supporters were like, Inter fans, join us. As Dom there with the tweet,
welcome to the rail. At the music Wally, Fartaro bringing back this gem.
Uh-oh, let's see if it's working. I don't even know if I have TikTok. Let's see what happens here.
You able to get it to work?
It's not working for me, so we'll have to take his word for it. I think you're just watching a video and saying, don't cry, Lautaro, and they're showing the camera was pounding him after he missed a penalty kick sky over, and so the guy was just talking about Lautaro crying, I guess. It's funny. Okay. I remember watching it was funny, but it's not working at the moment, so sorry, Wally. Appreciate it, though. All right. Sansone says, Dad, how good was this 2023-24 Inter when there was nothing on the line? And the old Vince McMahon is like, beautiful. He's crying. It's so good. Oh, Vince McMahon. Oh, that guy.
All right. Moving on. Lautaro channeling his inner Zaza minus the run-up. This was from at Adriano Calcio.
Shot Adriano into the upper deck.
Leonardo.
Shout out to the Calcio guys. All right, this one comes from Michael Jokin. And so it says, representation in the Champions League quarterfinals, Spain 3, Germany 2, England 2, Qatar 1. PSG, of course.
Yep.
All right.
Okay, so Napoli Sansone back at it again. Lautaro, the second there is something on the line, we've got pictures of...
Martial. Anthony Martial.
Anthony Martial.
Moise Kane.
Kyle George.
Man, I got that backwards.
And Judo Immobile.
Is this Vincent? Who is this? Oh, wow, man.
That's harsh. Clubhouse, I think.
All right, so this comes from Zombo and says, look what he did. This is a Lautaro shot if you missed it. Hold on a second. Here we go. Pew! Into space. Bam! Hits an astronaut. Oh, that's funny.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, now moving on. We nominated Michael Lisi, and it is our Michael has nominated Grego underscore 1899. Call Mike Maignan. Call the ambulance, but not for me. This was in reference to Maignan getting hurt in the second leg in Prague.
Yeah, and then
still managed to finish the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he didn't finish the game. Sports Yellow did come on for him.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. But he came back the very next game. All right. This one comes. This is from Joe Cello, friend of the show from. Oh my God, I forgot his podcast name. Going to kill me now. But anyway, he says, "Here's my nomination. It's Juventus wishing a happy birthday to Paul Pogba, who's suspended for 4 years for doping. Congratulations, Juventus."
Thanks for that, Juve.
No shame. No shame, Juve. No shame.
Okay. I am going to give it to Napoli Sansone.
The one with the Moise Kane and all those guys?
Yeah.
This one? Yeah, that was pretty good.
He has done it again. So it's been a while since Napoli Sansone has
Low Limit Football. Gosh, I apologize, Joe. Low Limit Football. I've been on the show many times and I forgot the damn name. I forgot the name of our podcast all the time, so it's all right.
Anything you want to say to the people while I write this up?
Again, every time I come onto the show, I'm like, I got shout outs to make. And then we get on the show, I'm like, what was I going to say? international break. No, I was going to, talk about episode 300. Very similar, like you said, to episode 200. We're going to have fun. There's no culture really to talk about. No games to talk about. No real games. We got the Azzurri games that we can talk about. But we're just going to have fun.
Yeah.
Catch back up with all our old friends and see what they're up to and their teams. And yeah. Have a good time. Talk for many hours, I imagine, because last time was 3 hours, like you said. And so, hey, middle of the day, that's good. We're going to get maybe some European friends involved and some North American friends as well. Maybe some other surprises. We'll see.
Most definitely. I think we're going to enjoy ourselves here. So I will, first of all, acknowledge the chat. Everybody was excellent. Thank you all for coming in and spending some time with us. Some of your comments, some of your takes, I'm sure you're able to, help blend into the show. It's always, always helpful from you guys. So thank you, very, very much. And I think with that, we're going to put a bow on 299 and let the anticipation and fun begin for 300. Mm-hmm. Which we will remind you, Sunday, March 24th, on the Serie A Sit Down YouTube channel at noon Eastern time. Join us to celebrate reaching podcast number 300. We are working through a laundry list of guests that we will have that we are going to probably give 10-15 minute spots here and there, to come and join us. And spend some time with us. Dominic, thank you very much. I'm, 363 days away from turning 50. So counting them down, baby, counting them down. Here we go. It's just, we're going to have a good time, going to have some things we can laugh at a little bit. It's, to Richard's point, it's going to be a great experience. If it's anything like what we did on 200, you're going to enjoy it. So, be sure to join us. It'll be a nice little appetizer for you before you take in that Italy Ecuador friendly, later on in the day. So with that said, 300th episode of Serie A Sit Down is the main course, and then Italy Ecuador is dessert. I think that's the way we got to frame
that's
it.
Right.
Here we go.
That's right.
So, with that said, we're going to put a bow on this edition of Serie A Sit Down, where we have our own channel on Apple Podcasts and SoundCloud, run Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever this podcast is. Serie A Sit Down at Serie A Sit Down on Twitter or Instagram. Go there with your thoughts. You can find us on Facebook as well. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Vincent. And these are the guys in the chat here on our YouTube channel. And if you are watching us for the first time and you didn't join the comments, shame on you. Join the comments. Tell us who you are. Tell us what you're drinking. But if you are watching for the first time, you enjoyed what you saw, hit that subscribe button. Hit the like. Thank you, Anthony. And then most importantly, hit that notification bell, because that will give you the heads up when we are back on the air. So Twitter handles, Richard, where can they catch you?
R_KHARMAN.
I'm at FTC_21. My tweets are protected though. So you do need to, you need just make the request and I will let you in. Unless you are a bot, then I will not let you in. I think that's it. I think we've covered it all. So
that's it. I repeat, episode 300 this Sunday at noon Eastern time.
Yes, join us. Join us. We're going to have a blast. So
join us.
The countdown begins 5 days away. So we will see you then. Enjoy the Italy games. Enjoy some of the games on the international break. Some compelling European Championship playoffs as well that you can watch in between those Italy games too. So might be an international break, but the football doesn't stop. So for Richard, I'm Frank. And as always, make sure you tell your paisans about us. Ciao.
Mette in mezzo la caccia di Lorenzo e la poteva